Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on Humboldt County efforts to prevent suicide, a new film about abalone populations on the North Coast, an injunction is granted for Mendocino's Dutch Charlie Creek, and this week's sports report. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off with a programming note. We are running a special on border wall resistance for the Labor Day holiday broadcast on Monday evening. We will be back to our regular newscast on Tuesday, September 8th. From the Eureka Police Department. The Eureka Police Department will place an increased emphasis on e-bikes, e-scooters, and e-motorcycles throughout the month of September as part of an ongoing effort to educate the community, promote safe riding, and address unsafe or unlawful riding behaviors. Those concerns were highlighted last week when an e-bike rider failed to stop at a stop sign and collided with the side of a vehicle. Fortunately, the collision was not fatal. The incident serves as an important reminder of the potential consequences when traffic laws are ignored and unsafe riding behaviors are allowed to continue. Beginning this month, EPD will supplement its educational efforts with focused enforcement. Officers will conduct traffic stops when violations are observed and use those contacts as an opportunity to educate e-bike riders about the law, reinforce safe riding practices, and address behaviors that could put riders, pedestrians, or motorists at risk. Residents and riders are encouraged to learn and follow the laws governing their vehicles, obey traffic signals and stop signs, ride responsibly, and prioritize the safety of themselves and others. From Humboldt County. The County of Humboldt's Fish and Game Advisory Commission awards grant funds to local projects using revenues from state fish and wildlife code violation fines. The Commission's grant program is currently accepting proposals, with $4,000 per project available in grant funds this year. To be considered for the Humboldt County Fish and Game Grant Program Award, projects must be focused on the protection, conservation, propagation, or preservation of fish and wildlife in Humboldt County. Those with interest in applying are encouraged to call 707-786-4902 for more information. From the Arcata School District. A vacancy has occurred on the Board of Trustees of the Arcata School District. The Board of Trustees is seeking a qualified person to join the board for the remaining two-year trustee Area 4 term via a provisional appointment. Also, a future vacancy will occur effective on December 11th, when the seat currently filled by Anna McClure will be vacated. The Board of Trustees is seeking a qualified person to join the board for a new four-year trustee Area 2 term via provisional appointment starting in December. Persons interested in applying for either position may obtain an application at arcataschooldistrict.org or by contacting Superintendent Luke Bisecker at 707-822-0351, extension 101. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. A Humboldt County proclamation seeks to inspire community-wide efforts to prevent suicide. Daniel Mintz reports.
Describing suicide prevention as a labor of love, a Humboldt County proclamation has declared the month of September as, quote, a time where individuals, organizations, and communities join voices to amplify the message that suicide can be prevented. At its September 1st meeting, the county's Board of Supervisors and those involved in veterans support and public health described suicide prevention as a community effort as the Suicide Prevention Month proclamation was approved. Read aloud by Supervisor Natalie Arroyo, the proclamation notes that the county's suicide rate is more than twice the state average, and for veterans, the rate is six times the state's. It also describes local responses to the issue.
Whereas firearms are the most common method used in suicide deaths, and access to safe storage can be obtained through the Humboldt County Department of Health and Human Services Public Health Keep It Safe program. And whereas knowing the signs of suicide, finding the words to talk with someone who may be thinking of suicide, and accessing local resources are actions everyone can take to care for themselves and their community. And whereas school staff play a vital role in promoting the health, safety, and well-being of children and youth, by fostering supportive environments where students feel connected, valued, and empowered to seek help.
The county's Suicide Prevention Network, or SPN, is described as a coalition of tribal partners, organizations, youth, school staff, and community members that is working to destigmatize suicide, uplift hope, and create tools to care for mental health in culturally responsible ways. National help is also highlighted, including the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, which can be called or texted 24/7 for free crisis counseling, and the Trevor Project, which focuses on support for queer youth. The prevalence of suicide among veterans was discussed by those who work with them. Bob Daugherty of Nation's Finest Veterans Services described suicide prevention as a community effort.
Suicide prevention is reliable community. It's food, it's housing, it's community supports. It's, hey, can you, do you want to go have a cup of coffee? It's, you know, it's being blunt and direct. You know, I have, this is not work for the squeamish. It's, you know, a direct, are you thinking about killing yourself? It's getting real blunt and direct so that you can get down to what it is. And I have those conversations and have made a difference here and there, now and then. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to do that. It's also, you know, it's a double dipper in that, you know, when I do have a loved one, a community member, a brother, sister, that makes that decision, that it also deeply affects me.
SPN member Elizabeth Rose Marini, who works with the Eureka VA clinic, said the clinic also offers firearm storage and noted that the annual North Coast Stand Down takes place from September 24th to September 26th at the Humboldt County Fairgrounds in Ferndale. SPN member and county health education specialist Allie Knoll said she hopes the proclamation will motivate action.
As you said, our county does see some of the highest rates of suicide in the entire state of California. And while I think proclamations are a really great step in raising awareness, we do need to take action to create the more caring, accepting, and empathetic worlds. And my hope is that this proclamation will be a reminder that suicide prevention is a community-wide effort, and we all have a role that we can play. And whether that be supporting policies that reduce stigma and increase access to mental health services, or checking in with a friend, learning warning signs of a crisis, or just encouraging someone to reach out for support, it all makes a difference and it all can save a life.
Arroyo acknowledged that inquiring about the possibility of suicide might seem awkward, but can be valuable, and, quote, it opens the door to a meaningful conversation and to escorting them to someone who can help. The proclamation also notes that September 8th is Community Safety Day, which is described as an annual day of action dedicated to spreading awareness about available resources for mental health and emotional support. Those include the 988 Crisis Line and the Humboldt County Behavioral Health Crisis Line at 707-445-7715. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
A new film details abalone's relationship with those on the North Coast and efforts to restore its population, KMUD News reports. Abalone, a marine snail prized as a food source and for its distinctive shells, are a vital part of North Coast culture, especially for indigenous communities. Recreational abalone fishing on the North Coast has been banned since 2018, with the current ban extended until at least 2036. commercial fishing for abalone in California has been banned since 1997. Populations have collapsed due to overfishing, heat waves, and invasive species like purple sea urchins destroying kelp forests along the coast, which is a main food source for abalone. The upcoming film, Abalone Stories, Loss, Connection, Renewal, takes a look at the impact of the devastated abalone population for North Coast residents, particularly Native people, through a series of personal stories. It also details efforts to remove invasive purple sea urchins to help abalone populations. KMUD News spoke with filmmaker and director Cynthia Abbott about her new film, which is part of a film series focused on environmental issues impacting our oceans, especially along the California coast. Cynthia spoke first on why she chose abalone as the film's subject matter, and the environmental crisis that led to a population collapse for abalone.
I've been watching what's happening to the North Coast with the decline of the bull kelp and the heat wave and lots of changes. And then the moratorium came about on the abalone back in 2018. And once I learned about, that's a long time ago, since then we've had the pandemic, but knowing that there was a moratorium on abalone diving and fishing, I realized that this would be a way to tell the story. What's happening through abalone would be a way to tell the story about these massive changes that have been taking place very rapidly along the North Coast. And especially the die-off of bull kelp, we've lost 95% of the bull kelp, and that's the major food source for abalone. And they're starving, and they're going very hungry, and their population has declined drastically. So this was a way for me to tell this story, to get the word out about our changing climate. All of my films, and including this film, the overall message is that there's climate change and a warming ocean, and there's a lot of trouble in our oceans right now.
Filmmaker Cynthia Abbott also spoke of abalone's cultural importance to the North Coast, especially for Native people. She also told a story of meeting a regalia dressmaker from the Yurok tribe, and how that impacted the film.
All of the people who are featured in the film have a close connection to abalone. And I didn't know the depth that the indigenous people had with abalone, because a lot of times I would read that, you know, here's what's happening, our abalone are starving, there's a moratorium, and it's, you know, the economically things would be mentioned, like, dive shops are closing. It's very, you know, it's changing the culture of the coast, like in Mendocino, which had a lot of tourism around diving. And then the mention of the indigenous relationships. I met Shoshone, who is a regalia dressmaker, and through the diver that I met, Steve, who introduced me to Shoshone because of their relationship around abalone. So after our conversation, she was very happy to be able to be a part of this project and share culturally the importance of abalone and the consequences of the loss of abalone to their culture and their ceremonies.
Cynthia Abbott, director of the film Abalone Stories, ended our conversation by driving home the importance of taking care of our oceans and the direct impacts when ocean diversity is threatened by environmental issues.
People, because we're land-based, don't quite relate, think about, oh, the ocean. And it is very, very important that we can, whatever we do, understand that whatever we do on land also affects the ocean, and the ocean sustains us.
The film, Abalone Stories, Loss, Connection, Renewal, will have its North Coast premiere at the Sea Ranch in Mendocino on Saturday, September 12th at 3 p.m. Admission is free. There will be a Humboldt County screening in Trinidad sometime in November, with a date set in the near future. We'll update listeners once we know that screening date. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Here's Ray Hamill with this week's KMUD News Sports Report.
The new local high school and college football season is up and running, and it was a good start for some of the North Coast programs. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have much more on the local football teams and break down the opening week in just a moment, as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest local soccer, some high school golf, and news of why it was a big week for one local driver. But first up, opening weekend of the new high school football season featured six HDNL teams, including impressive starts for a pair of league rivals. Last Friday night, the Fortuna Huskies kicked off their season with a big statement performance against St. Helena. The Huskies, who lost their opening three games a year ago, made sure there would be no repeat this fall and cruised to a comfortable 41-6 win over a team that made the North Coast Section semi-finals a year ago. The Ferndale Wildcats also started strong on the way to a 31-7 win at Anderson. Adrian Lopez enjoyed a standout debut at quarterback, while running backs Preston Killingsworth, Liam Bishop and Garen McClurg wore down Anderson with the help of an outstanding offensive line and grew stronger as the night went on. It was also a good start to the new season for the McKinleyville Panthers. The Panthers welcomed Cloverdale to McKinleyville High School on Saturday afternoon and overcame some adversity and early season nerves on the way to an 8-7 comeback win. Trailing 7-0 at halftime, the Panthers were unable to find much rhythm on offense early in the game, but they stuck with it and rallied in the second half, getting on the scoreboard with a safety before sophomore quarterback Corbin Green connected with sophomore receiver Everett Grootschmacher on a 65-yard fourth-quarter touchdown for what would be the winning score. And with their defense playing well all game and posting a shutout for the final three quarters, they were able to hold on down the stretch for a second straight opening weekend victory. Three other HDNL teams were also in action last weekend. The Del Nord Warriors, who welcomed back head coach Nick White to the sideline for the first time in 4 years, had the longest road trip of the weekend, traveling all the way to the Bay Area to play Oakland High School. But early season mistakes proved costly for the Warriors as the game got away from them early in the second half and they lost 34-20. The Hoopa Warriors also opened on the road, traveling to Trinity. And things did not go well for a young Hoopa team that featured three freshmen and four sophomores and found itself trailing by four touchdowns at halftime. The Hoopa players grew into the game and matched the home team with a pair of second half touchdowns before eventually falling 42-16. Rounding out a busy weekend for the local contingent of teams, the Eureka Loggers kicked off their season on Saturday night, hosting Windsor at the Redwood Bowl. But it was a disappointing start for the Loggers, who were never in the game and lost 41-0. Three local teams, South Fork, St. Bernard's and Arcata, had an opening weekend bye and will kick off their seasons this week. Arcata kicks off on Friday night against Ukiah in a game that will be played at McKinleyville High School, while St. Bernard's opens on Saturday afternoon. The Crusaders are expected to challenge for this year's Pacific League title, but will have their hands full in their opener against North Coast Section powerhouse St. Vincent de Paul, with kickoff set for 2 p.m. Also in action this weekend, McKinleyville plays at Fort Bragg, Eureka plays at Shasta, Fortuna travels to University Prep, and Hoopa plays at Healdsburg. All of those games take place on Friday night. Del Norte, meanwhile, will play at home, also on Friday night, when Ashland High School travels to Crescent City. Fresh off their opening win at Anderson, Ferndale has a bye this weekend. Some of the Mendocino County schools were also in action last weekend. Ukiah opened with a 50-14 win over Orland, while Fort Bragg beat rival Willits 12-5. Switching gears, College of the Redwoods kicked off the new college football season last week, and it was an impressive start to the new campaign for the Corsairs, who travelled to play San Jose City College and won comfortably 41-21. Sierra came storming out of the gates and led 35-7 at halftime, and after that there was no way back for the home team. The Jaguars, however, captured national headlines by featuring a 47-year-old player, defensive end Justin Buzzard, and the game was featured on ESPN's SportsCenter this week because of that. The showdown, however, belonged to the Corsairs, who dominated in a game that wasn't as close as the final score would suggest, after the Jaguars scored a pair of late TDs for a more flattering scoreline. In local high school soccer, meanwhile, it was a good week for the St. Bernard's girls. The Crusaders feature several starting freshmen this year and have been one of the stories of the young season. They are 5-0-1 on the season and captured the championship at the Upper Lake tournament last weekend, beating Clear Lake on a penalty shootout in the final. They continued to roll with a 3-2 win at Arcata on Tuesday. Also in girls' action this week, Ferndale and Del Norte tied 0-0 in their league opener. It was also a good weekend for the McKinleyville boys, who won the boys' Upper Lake tournament with a 2-0 win over Kelseyville in Saturday's final. However, they were unable to carry that momentum into Tuesday's league opener against Fortuna and lost 1-0. The Huskies avenged an earlier loss to McKinleyville and have won four straight games since then. Also in HDNL boys action this week, the Eureka Loggers got their first win of the season, beating South Fork 3-0. The local high school girls golf season also officially began this week, as the league golfers travelled to Beaupré Golf Course in McKinleyville for the season opening Beaupré Best Ball Challenge. And it was a good start for the defending league champion Del Norte girls. The Del Norte pairing of Jaylee Keeling and Taylor Horner posted the low score of the day, placing first with an 86. And rounding out a busy week in local sports, it was a big weekend for North Coast Motorsports fans with the penultimate race night of the season at the Redwood Acres Raceway. Brandon Barnwell had a good night and solidified his lead in the late models season standings by placing first in a competitive and back-and-forth main event. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumbleSports.com.
We have an update from Ray Hamill for this week's sports report. South Fork football defeated the California School for the Deaf 54-0. And up next, a Mendocino County judge has granted an injunction halting logging near Dutch Charlie Creek, keeping the pause in place until a lawsuit over timber plans is decided. KMUD News reports.
The Superior Court of Mendocino County has granted a preliminary injunction sought by friends of Dutch Charlie Creek, halting logging under the Hot Tuna in Lincoln Logs timber harvest plans until the underlying lawsuit against Cal Fire and Redwood Timber Company is resolved. The order, issued by Judge Charlotte Scott, follows an August 27th hearing in Ukiah and builds on a temporary halt the Court of Appeal ordered on August 17th. The court's order isn't a total freeze. It allows RTC to remove logs only from locations where Cal Fire's inspections determined that forest practice rules require water breaks on opened tractor and cable roads. Friends of Dutch Charlie Creek argues the timber plans threaten one of the last strongholds of endangered coho salmon and that they were approved without adequately assessing sediment impacts to the creek, the basis of the group's underlying lawsuit. The group's suit, filed in July, claims the plans violate the California Environmental Quality Act by failing to assess how new road construction and log removal could send sediment into the creek. Sediment, they say, could smother salmon spawning beds. That claim over sediment impact is expected to be central when the court takes up the merits of the case in the coming months. Group Director Philip McGarvey, in an email to supporters, said the win comes with real losses already on the ground. In his words, quote, The sad news is that RTC now claims to have already cut 776 acres of the 926 acres in the plans. This is tragic. The court acknowledged by granting a stay on August 17th that they made a mistake by twice denying us a stay earlier. This mistake allowed RTC to cut 776 acres of forest under plans that should have never been approved in the first place, end quote. Still, McGarvey pointed to what's left standing, writing, 150 acres in the plans were not cut, and only 14% of the Dutch Charlie watershed has been cut. While it is tragic, it does not change our determination to protect the watershed. Winning the lawsuit will be a huge step toward that goal. McGarvey said more than 40 supporters turned out for the hearing, and he's optimistic about the case ahead. As he put it, quote, "With this injunction, I think we've done 90% of the effort, and we are likely to win. If we win, RTC will hopefully consider the conservation alternative rather than trying to go through this again," end quote. He said arguments on the merits of the case are expected in the next few months. McGarvey was also blunt about what the fight has cost, calling today's ruling a big victory in the court and a sad reminder of the state of the regulatory processes. One where, he says, the system allowed this damage to be done with no recourse. He closed on a personal note, saying he grieves the damage done while celebrating the win and the rain. Walking in the forest, he said, he feels the land's assurance that it will keep doing what it always does. Quote, "Turning rock and air into soil and life," end quote. This is a story we'll keep tracking, so check back for updates as the case moves forward. Reporting for KMUD News, this is Bridget Carstensen.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporters for this broadcast, Ray Hamill and Daniel Mintz, along with our assistant director, Bridget Carstensen. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention, other stories we're missing, or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, a national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingtao, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Have a great Labor Day weekend and stay tuned in.